So I have an issue, and I wanted to see if you guys could help me through it.
Irritable bowel syndrome?
It's not that.
I'm just guessing. I'm just assuming.
I'm so glad you're finally admitting it, Russ. For 10 years, Russ has constantly been telling me, I'm just nervous right now. I'm just nervous.
No, my issue right now is that I have too much juice. I've been making selected trips to the supermarket, and I don't want to make too many trips, but I really need orange juice in the morning to wake up. And I overbought, and now the juice is expiring, and I need to really plow through it.
Well, have you tried asking Lizzo, like, what she did with the juice that she had? Because she did a big song that sort of took the world by storm. That was sort of her, you know, confession slash sort of anthem about having just the exact situation that you are in right now.
Yeah.
So did you even listen to that? Did you even think to ask Lizzo?
What's sort of the upshot of that?
Well,
you can't summarize it. Griffin's not Liz Notes. You can't just like bring it, boil it down for you. It takes 3 minutes. Just listen to the Lizzo track.
It kind of, if I were to try, let me try. It's kind of more or less about that. It's a good thing that she has as much juice as she does. And she likes having, and she has like every morning she wakes up, I guess, and has juice with her breakfast. And I'll be honest, there's a lot of sort of metaphorical language.
Okay.
Used about the juice that went completely over my head.
Russ, have you considered maybe New York has so many fixtures? Maybe you could be juice guy, and you could be in like a How I Met Your Mother kind of thing where it's like, oh, this juice guy. If you walk past, he'll offer you a cup of juice.
Yeah,
but you have to have your own cup, or you can make a cup out of your hands. But he will offer.
The problem there is the juice still goes bad, right? But if Russ just drank all of the juice today, he would become engorged.
Hey, Russ, I realize we're running long here for a cold opening, but this is a pretty boring game this week, so I don't really care that much. Would you run and just get a huge bottle of juice? Would you run and get some of this mystical juice and just drink it on the show for me? Just see how much you could drink in one sort of go?
I already have my glass. It's not a good idea.
You don't need a glass. Not for what we're doing
here. He wants
here.
It straight from the bottle. We're talking about like you're getting ready for an MRI, but it's juicy.
I just want to watch you chug some juice on the show. I want to help you through this problem by helping you to watch you chug juice and inspiring you to chug more juice.
That's the solve? Putting
yeah,
him
yeah
in
I just want to watch you chug juice
coma.
On the podcast.
He needs it.
No, you will be fine. You'll be fine. Be good for your body. Siri just said, I'm sorry, I don't understand. And I'm right there with you, Siri. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best games of 1,000 years ago.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best 51 games of the week.
My name is Chris Plant, and I know a few of those games are pretty good.
My name is Russ Rushing, and I know the best game of the week.
Justin is hiding under his desk. So badly does Justin not want to talk about Clubhouse Games. He is hiding
under
his
desk. I'm so excited. I'm so excited to talk about Clubhouse Games. Welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and outest and most availablest in game entertainment electronic delights. This week we have a veritable cornucopia of your great grandpap's favorite
holy
games.
Shit, I feel like this is gonna be my Super Mario Galaxy week where I'm like fighting off you three
no
demons.
I'm on board with Griffin, but
yeah, I okay. also like
Perfect.
Going to Cracker
That's
Barrel
good.
Now and then, you know.
Yeah. You're no Egno Ramus. You love that, like, jumping sure. the little pegs over the thing.
Right.
Clubhouse Games is 51 games, and hold on, let me try again for video purposes, if you're watching the video version of the Besties. Clubhouse Games is 51 games. That one had air quotes, where you can, some annoying people, pretend to play them for 10 seconds, and then you play them, and a lot of them are the pits. Who
okay.
wants to start?
I will give you this. Clubhouse Games on Nintendo
you
Switch.
You already gave me this. You gave me this assignment to play the very boring.
No, listen, I'm going
to
meet you halfway.
Okay.
Clubhouse Games is a collection of 50 games.
Yes.
The piano game, I'll give you the quotes on that one, is nothing. It's one octave on a little virtual piano. It's nothing. That's one of the 50. Now, the other 50 games,
there's
some stinkers in there.
So I'm going to meet you halfway, and by meeting you halfway, I'm going to give you a Nokia flip phone and 20 minutes on a free app store, and that will get you halfway to Clubhouse Games. With another 20 minutes, you'll have the whole thing on your phone.
Okay.
For absolute, maybe you'll get some. You'll have to watch some ads for some Russian Match 3 games, but other than that, it'll be gratis.
Okay, let me set it up for folks at home who have not played Clubhouse Games on Nintendo Switch. It's a sequel to a Nintendo DS game that was essentially the same thing, a collection of board games, card games, and
B-O-R-E. ED.
Thank you, Justin. Let me get through it, and then you can continue to open up your wide, wide butthole to continue shitting all over it. Collection of card games, board games from all around the world, as well as a sort of erratic smattering of other stuff. In this Switch version, we're talking about sort of lightweight versions of a lot of the Wii Sports titles. Mm-hmm. We're talking about things that integrate the touchscreen, like a little air hockey game. There's like a collection of sort of toy games. So there's like toy tanks and toy boxing. I have played this game a lot, like a whole lot. I've been trying to beat all of the AIs on all of the most difficult difficulties, which is for some of the games.
You're
is
a
like
fucking a fucking maniac, Griffin.
I fucking love this game, but the
Griffin's also immortal. So.
Yes, true. Where it is most successful, I think, is in the card and board games categories. A lot of the like, here is darts, but you play it by swiping your finger at the screen and hoping for the best. Like those aren't especially sort of successful for me. But man, I don't know. These fucking card and board games are good, and that's why they are, you know, the classics that they are. I'll play chess, I'll play backgammon, I'll play, you know, whatever. Not checkers. Checkers isn't a good game, but there's just a lot of games on here. It's a good value.
Griffin, how much multiplayer have you played?
I played quite a bit.
Yeah. I think that's where it really holds its own.
It's great. So the multiplayer works like you hop into like a menu that shows you all of the games that have multiplayer in them. And then you can select anywhere from 1 to 3 of them and kind of just queue up, and it'll match you against somebody else who is wanting to play those. And it'll show little icons to show you like who's currently looking for partners on which games. So like I've been playing a lot of chess on there, and there's almost always somebody playing chess. So you click chess and boop, you're playing it online. What I like about playing chess in Clubhouse Games as opposed to chess.com, because I sort of cycle in and out of chess.com because I enjoy a good game from chess from time to time, is the people who play chess on chess.com are really fucking good at chess. And the people who play chess on Clubhouse Games are really good at Mario Kart. And so it's pretty fun to go in there and just let Hulkamania kind of run wild. Yeah, so the multiplayer's good. I haven't played with like friends. You can like set up like a friend lobby and just like, you know, play a bunch of shit. But like, it's kind of fun picking a few games that you feel like playing right now, not really knowing which one you're going to get into, and then doing it online.
Yeah, it's funny that you mention online. I mean, I realize having people over to houses is kind of a problem right now, but I was actually talking about the local multiplayer, which I think makes this game totally 100% worth it. And again, this really at this point just applies to like if you have a big family at home or other people, like you have roommates at home. But if you happen to have that, I think there are very few Switch games that are like this easy to just like jump into for multiplayer. Like even Smash Brothers, which is obviously a great multiplayer game, requires some setup and like who am I gonna pick and who I'm gonna like, oh, this stage or this stage and what settings we're gonna use. Whereas this, you are in a fucking game like that, and you don't have to like deal with like card boxes and shit. Like it seems like so much easier and light lift.
I think you can share. I've not done this. I should probably try with Rachel because she has her own Switch. But I think you can just like, if you own the game, you can play multiplayer with other people, even if they don't have the game in a local setting.
Yeah,
that's fucking cool. I can't think of another Switch game that has done that yet.
Yeah, there's like a free multiplayer app on the eShop for people that don't own the game, where they can basically download the like that, and it'll allow you to play all the games. But obviously, you can't like start the games yourself. You have to be joining a local multiplayer. But that solves the problem. If you happen to have two Switches in the house, it's like great for that.
But I also wanted to set up, because we talked a lot about the multiplayer, the single player is arranged in basically just like a big list of games that you can pick from, and then each game will have different difficulty settings, usually 4 difficulty settings, and then sometimes like some occasional like trophies. Like there's a golf mini game that's like you get a trophy for finishing a 3-hole round under par or a 9-hole round under par. So like those are the kinds of things I've been chasing. The other way that it's sort of arranged is you have a big globe and you you pick a little miniature piece for yourself that you design, and then you plant it where you live in the globe. And then you can pick what are called guides from all around the world. And these are like little AI people, although you can set yourself up as a guide by picking your favorite games. And they will hand you like a selection of games based on a theme. So these games are all just based on luck. And there you play like the card game War, or, you know, other games that are just essentially
chess.
what's Takoyaki is another one. It's just like there's no skill involved. Yeah. It's just a luck based game. But then there is like, these are the worldwide strategy classics. And that's where you get like chess, and you get shogi and mini shogi, which I like. There are a lot of games in here that I know about, like shogi and Hanafuda, that I'd never played before, because like there's very little opportunity for me to play that. But these games like have a really great tutorial, and then also pretty much all the games have guides where like you can turn them on and it will show you like really, really helpful info while you're playing mm-hmm. it. So like Richi Mahjong has like what, like 50 different like hands that you can try to put together, and that's impossible to keep track of if you're not like an extremely experienced Mahjong player, but it makes it approachable. And I think that that's kind of incredible. Like that alone is sort of a pretty great, achievement of the game. Chris, you were going to say something.
Yeah, this is just my dullard take on video game design. Modern video games are they're like designed for fun, where you can play them alone and like have fun. Classic games, they're designed to destroy people. Like that's what they're designed for. They're designed to, there are two people, and one of them is going to come away from it unhappy, and the other one is going to come away from it feeling good because the other one is unhappy.
Right.
And that is great. I'm a big fan of it, don't get me wrong. But as somebody who is not bright or good at games, I tend to find that I'm the person who comes away unhappy.
It should be noted you've never played Call of Duty multiplayer then, because that's almost the exact same scenario.
I would argue.
I'm saying obviously. Well, and that's true. I don't play online games anymore.
Yeah.
Because like I don't have time to get good.
Yeah.
So they're just not pleasurable, and like I mean, I don't know. There are exceptions to the rule. I obviously like Towerfall. I like games that are continuations of series that I've mastered long ago. But yeah, I had never really considered how much. And of course, it makes sense because games didn't have artificial intelligence. They couldn't. They had right. to design with somebody who is counter to you. And also, games historically were inspired by war or conflict. So sure, but yes, I think like I fall somewhere between you and Justin in this, where it's like, yeah, if you don't have somebody right now, like I just don't have a lot of time to play with Steph, and she's the only person I could theoretically play this with.
I mean, you could probably kick your kid's ass at most of these games.
Oh, I could destroy
unless you play like War. You play one of those more randomized games and you know,
hope he hits the button. I think for me, like that, I think I'll enjoy this game a lot more. I was thinking like this would be a great game to have in the office at Polygon, because mm-hmm. there are plenty of times where like we would have meetings that are like more brainstormy, and you just throw something on the Switch and it's like, I need something that I'm kind of paying attention to that is like keeps us engaged and has our minds going, but we can still like talk and have a conversation. And like that's where I've always loved card games for.
I think it occupies like a really incredible space, and like I am glad to have this on my Switch. There's been a lot of shit that has come out on Switch lately, mm-hmm. right? And I have been excited to have some of it, and then like also just not feeling it a lot of the time. I downloaded, so there's this huge summer sale going on in the Switch eShop that I think is still going on, which like if you are a listener of the show and you haven't dipped in, dip in, because the it's pretty incredible, some of the stuff. I got Doom at half price because I never finished Doom, and the Switch port is pretty great. Finished Bioshock 2, I got the Borderlands collection, I got like a bunch of stuff, and they're all pretty much shooters. And like with everything that's going on, like I as great as these games are, like I just have not. It is like a type of gaming experience that like is not great right now, and so I keep returning to Clubhouse games to just like fuck around with, you know, backgammon. Like I fuck around with and try to learn more strategies for how to be better at Connect 4, and it really has like sort of condensed what I like enjoy about games in a way that like I don't really think about, of just like I enjoy getting better at games. And you don't think about Connect Four like that because it's Connect Four. Like everybody, I think, knows how good they are at Connect Four and assumes they're not going to get any better at it. But this is a game that is sort of like about those games and about like thinking about them differently and improving at them. I think it's a fantastic just sort of off-court buddy.
I was just going to say that the one thing that I wish there was more of, and Eurogamer's review kind of get into this, and I don't think it goes quite as far as it should, is the history of these games. Like, that is what, I know, it is nerdy, but I think about this as, like, any other retro game collection, right? Like, we've seen these, like, SNK collections and other various collections pop up on the Switch, where it's like, hey, here's the game, but also, here's, like, magazine scans from the time, and here's like developer notes, and here's all of the stuff so that you can appreciate all of the stuff around the game and actually learn about game history. And this, I mean, this is like an object of game history. That's largely what it is. It's like, here is 51 games from across the world throughout all of history. And it does a little bit of that, of giving
you... Yeah, it gives you trivia at trivia. The end of each game. Yeah.
But I do wish, because it does feel so museum-y, that it had just more of that, that they had treated it the same way that all these other retro game collections have been done in the past.
I do wish there was more. The DS version had like a mission based system that was like more specific, like, you know, finish a game of memory in under a certain time limit, or like get a turkey in bowling. Like it would challenge you with doing like specific sort of micro games within the collection. And this doesn't really have that, which is a shame, because that was like a cool way to play that.
To that note, I think what bothers me about this collection, the reason it didn't click for me, all kidding aside, there's this iOS game I love, I think we talked about before, called Cribbage with Grandpas, where you customize your own grandpa and name him and pick all the background and features and stuff, and then you play cribbage with him, and as you play, he is like nudging you towards better plays, he can give you assistance, he's chatting with you about the history or strategy or how your play went and giving you feedback. And admittedly, this is all sort of built around one game that I don't understand that well, but now I understand cribbage really well. I think what would have made this work for me is if it was better at, there's like this very, okay, I played Renegade this morning and it's Othello, and that game is very annoying. But when it first started, they were like, someone was like, I always lose the last second. And this dude's like, well, did you control the corners? And she's like, what? And he's like, oh yeah, if you control the corners, it's a lot easier to flip the script on your opponent at the last second. And it's like, oh, I was like, oh wow, I never thought about that before. If they had something like that and get rid of a lot of the cruft here, and make this a way to really understand 20 games, like to really get in there and like have a guided experience. I've tried to learn Hand and Foot like literally half a dozen times at this point. And I'll try to wrap my mind around it and try to keep up with it. And it's just like no dice. If this
it's a card game. There are no dice.
That explains it. I keep looking for the dice. Now, if that was part of, if this was what this was, like something that took the time to like really explain these games in a guided way and help you walk away with a better appreciation, both historic and just like strategic, I think that would make it really worthwhile. Without that, it's just sort of like, I don't know. I don't see much. It's like a convenience more than it is like something worth seeking out.
And there's a precedent for that. There's like I want to say three games total in the set that walks you through a multi-step tutorial before you can play it. So like chess is like, let's learn chess, step one. Let's learn Shogi is one of them, which is basically like chess. I didn't fucking know that. Like, I didn't know what the fuck Shogi was all about. Like, I guess it kind of looks like chess, but I never assumed that. And then there, Rishi Mahjong is another one where it's like, let's learn how this game works over a series of like miniature, you know, tutorial levels of it. Like, and that was instrumental in me understanding, like, well, I knew how chess worked, but all of the other games and how they work. But yes, like learning pro strats at Connect Four, I only did that because of the internet, right? Like I only got I was losing to the impossible level AI 1,000 times.
Are there pro strats for Connect Four?
I mean, there are strategies for literally every board
Don't
game.
Don't stop
that
at
has
three.
A skill.
Just keep it going. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Russ, that's all it is. Yes, I agree. I if this had been a collection of 20 games, and they had put a little bit more care and attention into like teaching you how to be very good at Mancala, which I am having a real love affair with
right now.
Great. Then I do agree. I think it would be a better thing. Because boy howdy, I don't want to play fucking toy boxing. I don't want to play fishing ever again. It's not
curling
great.
Is good.
I platinumed Tank right away. Tank just got wrecked by me.
Yeah. The curling minigame is good, but it would be better if it was actual curling.
Yeah.
Like it was an actual not this weird. Yeah.
I think for most people, if you're listening to this, the only really good reason for you to pick this up is if you have a local multiplayer person that you can play with, because I think most of these games become much, much better if you're sitting next to the person you're playing against. Plant mentioned Towerfall, which is like one of our favorite games ever. It really only works in local multiplayer, like ignoring the fact that like I don't think there is online multiplayer, but like the experience itself really only works in local multiplayer. And I think the same is true for games like Smash Brothers. And I think in this, because these are easily accessible, familiar games, if you're in a setting where there's like a handful of people that aren't really gamers, you could throw this on and someone will find something, hey, let's play whatever, this like whatever thing for 10 minutes. And it's like way easier than a lot of other solves. But if you're just alone and you're maybe I'll play online or something, I don't think it's worth it.
One more thing. It comes with Wii Bowling. It's not as charming as Wii Bowling. You can't throw the ball behind you. You don't have like your friends cheering you on, but it's pretty similar. And you also don't have the Wii Motion controller, which like
you can play it with your
but it doesn't feel as
not the Wiimote, the Joy-Con.
Yeah, the Joy-Con.
Be wild if you could use a Wiimote. I would disagree with Russ because I have played it mostly single player. Like there is a great satisfaction in trying to get much, much better at these games, and you can do that in a single player environment. And I'll tell you, I played Gomoku, which is like the simplified version of Go, which is essentially like basically Connect 5 on a sort of 2D plane. I played that for easily a couple hours, just trying to beat the AI on the most difficult difficulty and just getting my ass stomped. But when I did finally finish it, like it was a sense of like Dark Souls level beating the boss satisfaction of just like, yes, I'm finally fucking good enough at this board game that I don't have to play it anymore. I have enjoyed it so much. And I again, like maybe wait for it to go on sale, which it probably won't if you're like on the fence about it. But like, I feel this weird sense of comfort knowing it lives on my Switch, and that anytime I don't have anything else to play and I just kind of want something to nibble on, I can hop in and play some backgammon or whatever.
Can I mention one more aspect that we haven't really talked about? If you happen to have multiple Switches in your house,
there is
a thing called Mosaic Mode. And Griffin mentioned the piano earlier, how it only has one octave. If you have four fucking Switches and you put them next to each other and connect them all, it's a full piano.
Well, full piano's 8 octaves.
Yeah, whatever.
Maybe it's 2 octaves on the Switch.
Anyway, you can do that with a lot of the multiplayer games where like there's like a slot car racing game and you could like arrange the Switches to like make your own track across multiple Switches. It's really neat.
Yeah, 4 switches laid end to end is just how Franklin Delano Piano envisioned it when he created his great
the
instrument.
The dream is true.
Right.
Can we not talk about this anymore and talk about literally anything
else? Let's do it.
So after being delayed a week, we finally got the PlayStation 5 launch event. Launch announcement.
Premiere.
Announcement event.
Premiere.
Well, however you want to
call
it.
World exclusive.
World exclusive. And while there were some new games on display, so happy to see my dear friends and cousins Ratchet and Clank back on the scene. We also got the first look at the PlayStation 5 box, and that is what we wanted to talk about right now, the aesthetics of the box that is PlayStation 5. I'm pulling up a giant high-res.
Let's pull up the biggest fucking... it's... No, 800 by 450 is not going
to
do.
I need
way
more
pixels.
I will say what jumped to mind immediately upon seeing it was inverted ice cream sandwich. Because there's really nothing... I mean, we have the white on the outside and the black on the inside, and it's basically an inverted ice cream sandwich.
Let's... let's do our, there are probably people listening to this who don't give a shit about stuff like this. So let's try and describe.
That's
what
I was saying. Ice cream sandwich. Who doesn't care
inverted
about
inverted ice cream
sandwich
is useless.
Okay, no. Let me help you. Okay, picture Donald Duck. Right, Donald Duck.
Okay,
with his mouth open. He is trying and failing to swallow the black obelisk from 2001: Space Odyssey. Right, and his duck bill is made out of human teeth.
Oh, this is still not great.
I mean that's pretty clear mental image.
I want you to imagine a black router or perhaps even a very very thin air purifier, and then take two sort of white sheets of printer paper and just squeeze a sheet on each side of it, trying to envelop it all the way, but you can't quite get there, can you? You can't quite get there. And so you get something that looks like a router that looks like one day its dreams are going to come true and it's going to take off and start flying. I think there are angles at which you could look at it in which it is slightly Georgia O'Keeffe-y. I think it's a little Keefe-y from certain angles if you wanted to get there.
Interesting.
Well, you know that it makes a V, which I really like.
Oh.
It's PlayStation 5, and if you're looking at it front on, It's alluding to a V shape. I think it looks cool, personally. I think it's like a neat, it looks different from the other boxes. I feel like very uninspired design for this generation of consoles. So I dig the look. It looks like a shock trooper, futuristic shock trooper that you would fight in haze. It has a very haze feel, which I very much enjoy. An illusion everybody can do.
I think Microsoft designs everything to fit into like a kind of a cliche, a mid-century modern home. Like, this will look okay, especially once they eventually release the like kind of like white version, like the Xbox One S, right? PlayStation for Sony, they're like, what is the most of this moment thing we can make? Like, what is the thing that the day after it comes out, people are gonna be like, no, that just feels like a little bit like of yesterday. Like, look at the PlayStation 3 with the George Foreman grill.
PlayStation 4 is pretty timeless and ignorable.
PlayStation 4 is it felt like it was going closer to the Microsoft route.
Yeah.
And then for PlayStation 5, they were like, psych. That was a huge mistake.
It looks like this.
That looked too nice inside of your living room. And the best thing about this is, I mean, if all these guesstimates are right on Twitter, this thing's huge. Like, I think maybe this lives like standing alongside your entertainment center, kind of like a tower PC.
I already have a tower PC though, and it's fucking huge. Like, I don't know where this fella's gonna go if he is very big. Do you guys remember the other like quote-unquote leaked design of the PS5 that looked like a sort of spaceship toilet seat?
No.
Yeah.
No. I think it was like it was sort of V-shaped. It was also sort of V-shaped, but it was like a I don't know how to describe it. It almost looks like a big hard drive, like a big ovular hard drive, but with like a V cut out in the top and lights inside of the V. So it just really does look like a light up futuristic like Japanese bidet toilet seat.
Hey, weird thing how one of these has a disk drive and the other one doesn't. That's really weird. I still classify that as appearance. I don't feel like I'm getting out of bounds here. That's wild, huh? Is that where we're going? Is that anybody gonna get the non disc version if you get one?
Well, let's have a quick mini sidebar discussion, because I used to be firmly in the camp of like, I like having physical versions of things. I don't know why I did the pizza chef Mamma Mia thing with my hand.
You
when
like
I said
physical
that.
Pizza.
I like a physical pizza. If there's a big game out, when the Switch came out, I specifically bought Breath of the Wild on cartridge because like I wanted to have the box. Like there was something about that was in one way sort of like tangibly satisfying. It's like cool. It's the reason like, you know, that I have records is because like I like having the thing, but also because there is like a level of security there of just like, well, I know where this cartridge is. Recently, I lost my copy of Civ 6 for Switch. Like, it's just fucking gone. Like, that little cartridge, I'll never see it.
Oh, yeah, forget about it. That's in your son's tummy.
It's somewhere. And then I had, like, that was when I had the adult realization of just like, oh, well, that doesn't fucking happen in a digital. Like,
yeah.
if I had it digitally, then, you know, maybe when the eShop shuts down in however many decades, like, then it'll be gone. But, like, it's good for right now. And I think I've crossed over into the, like, I don't want disc-based games. And I think the PS4 has contributed to that because I have the PS4 Pro that is, like, supposedly, like, the good version of it, that if it does have a disc in it, it still is, like, kind of fucking noisy.
Yeah.
And that does not happen when it's a digital.
Yeah, game. I'm very pro going all digital for games. This generation I went almost all digital and I like it. I don't like the clutter in my house. The only reason I'm considering a disc for the PS5 is because sometimes I'm a member of BAFTA and sometimes I get DVDs in the mail. And do I want to keep a PS4 around just to play those random DVDs occasionally? But for gaming, I think it's totally fine. I also think because of the backwards compatible nature of the PS5, and I think this is going to be the case for a lot of consoles moving forward. Like, I think the next Switch, whenever that happens, will probably still run Switch games. Having all those digital makes it so much easier because you just, like, go back your catalog in the way that you can on 360 games.
Yeah. So I'm also curious how they do backwards compatibility for, like, PlayStation 6. Because a thing that we've seen so far, and I believe this is the case, not 100% sure, but I think if you own games on PS4 and they are disc-based, mm-hmm. so you haven't downloaded them yet, and then you want to do back compat on PS5, you have to have the disc version of the PS5.
Yes, you can.
So, like, if you buy Madden and you buy the disc version, but then you buy the digital version of Madden, it's like, well, now you have to buy Madden again. Yeah. Where it's like, if you just buy the digital version of Madden on PS4, and then whatever PS5 you have, it'll just presumably
GameStop
work.
Is fucked, huh?
I mean, it's hard not to also feel like, I mean, GameSpot has been, the stock has been dropping.
Stop. What? Stop, you did it. I can't believe it. It's 2020 and you mix up GameStop and GameSpot.
Oh my god.
It's unbelievable. It's 2020.
Unfathomable.
They're all the same. Anyway, the storefront, the stock has been doing not good, and this feels a little bit like, you know, they were kind of a threat 8 years ago, but who's gonna stop us?
Well,
now?
They'll hold, like, on through the console launches, and then they're just gonna drop like a fucking stone.
Yeah, but I mean, Sony releasing a no disc version of the console at launch.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine 8 years ago, because that would be going straight up against the storefronts.
Yeah.
And now it just seems like they're like, who cares?
Tough shit.
Hey, we've gotten so far away from the design. I'm so mad at you guys. I only want to talk about how it looks on our... The best thing to talk about in an audio podcast is how something looks. We've discussed this over and over and over again.
Yeah, so that's kind of a brief look summary of specifically what the PS5 looks like, but we are going to do an intense, extreme head-to-head battle royale between the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5 in a very exciting special in July. We're going to do a whole episode where they're going head-to-head.
We're going to decide the winner.
We're going to decide the winner
right fucking now, because you don't need to buy both of these dang things. So we're going to tell you which one to buy.
Yes. So get excited for that.
Oh my. Has anybody been playing anything else? I feel like weirdly we are in a pretty, like, dense release time right now. I say that, but it's mostly Switch ports that I'm playing.
Yeah, I have also been playing Switch ports. The most recent one that I've been playing, which I can talk about because the embargo lifts today, the day this episode comes out, is Burnout Paradise on Nintendo Switch.
I'm so fucking jealous. I want that so
bad. I do not really get into racing games at all, but I've always loved the Burnout series. We've talked a little bit about it on the show. Burnout Paradise, I was very nervous because I have such fond memories of that game, and I was worried it coming to Switch, it might not go great. And it goes so great. It runs so great. It's 60 FPS, steady. All the features are in there. All the DLC they release is in there. The only caveat is if you would rather play it on any other platform, it's going to be, like, so much cheaper. It's like $5 on PC. But, you know, Switch, obviously, you can play it portable. It looks great in handheld mode. It's absolutely superb. So I highly recommend it.
I have been playing a little bit of Destiny 2, new season. Pretty good. That's all I'll say about that. Also, Slay the Spire is out on iOS. If you have not played that game before, you have no excuse. I didn't know this earlier this year. They came out with a fourth character.
Oh, wow.
The Watcher. Yeah, it's a pretty cool. I know this seems like minutia if you've never played the game before, but like it completely changes how you play it, and it's all about switching between these different stances. Mm. It's really cool. But I also wanted to shout out Bug Fables
on Nintendo
Switch, the Everlasting Sapling. Put simply, it is a Paper Mario game. Literally, it has that sort of like 2D papercraft aesthetic to it, but it is like a completely original story about this world full of bugs. You control a party of three different bugs, and it has like, you know, that timing based turn based RPG sort of combat like you would see in the Mario RPG games, but there is also like a level of sort of Lost Vikings-esque puzzle solving, because you have these three different bugs that can do different things, and you are switching between them in the world to, like, you know, use the magic bug to freeze an enemy, and then the beetle to like push it into where you need it to be as a block, so you can jump up on it and throw your boomerang as the bee. But like, there's a lot of like, it elevates, I think, that Paper Mario idea in a way that is very, very cool. I will be honest, some of my wind in playing this game was taken out of the sails by seeing the announcement of a new Paper Mario game coming out next month. So there, part of me doesn't want to spoil my dinner a little bit, but it's really great. It came out on PC, I think, last year, and got kind of rave reviews there, and Switch is just kind of a perfect little platform for it. So if you're hungry for just a really well-made RPG, Bug Fables is where it's at.
I'm just still playing Monster Train. It's still exceptional. if you find yourself enjoying Slay the Spire or other rogue-like deck-building games like that, you should play Monster Train. I can't believe we talked about Clubhouse games this week instead of Monster Train.
I've been playing Assassin's Creed Origins. It's very good. But my real answer is actually tied to two things from reader mail. So I'll just dig into that and then tie it to what I've been playing. From Nerd Piggy, we have, what are some hidden gems from that itch.io racial justice bundle? Ooh. And from Escaped Muppet, found any gems you'd never played before in the bundle for racial justice on itch. I just finished Quadrilateral Cowboy, which led me down a rabbit hole playing Blinda's other games, Gravity Bone and 30 Flights of Loving. Those games rule. They are
very good. What is Blinda up to?
I don't know. They actually just released the source code for, I believe, all of those games on... somewhere. Look on their Twitter, and I'm sure you'll be able to find it. Here are some games I think everybody should check out. Fortune 499 by AP Thompson and crew. That game rules. Hidden Folks is on there. Mm-hmm. Ooh, by friend of the show, Adrian DeJong. That game also exceptional.
Super dope.
Dujana, Pikuniku, Nuclear Throne. There's so many that I'm just going to start naming some. Here are two that I had not played but been meaning to that I really am enjoying this week. Wheels of Aurelia and Wide Ocean Big Jacket. Both are excellent. 2064, Read Only Memories, Minute. I mean, there are just so many games. Oh, one that I definitely want to call it, A Mortician's Tale. Is a really lovely game about basically the culture of funeral homes and morticians and eco-friendly death services. It's great. There's so much here. I'll let everybody else join in. But one thing that I do recommend everybody do, because honestly, this is the best way to take care advantage of this opportunity, is just pick random ones. Like, yeah. So much of gaming is this annoying marketing drip where you know everything about a game before you play it, and the chance to just open up a pack of 1,000 games and scroll through it and randomly try something and know nothing about it is fantastic. And it's something that Fresh and I get to enjoy each year because we are judges for the Independent Games Festival. And it is, it's something that I look forward to every November. And the fact that so many people get to try that out now, and honestly, you could try that out anytime by going to itch.io and just picking a random game. But hey, here you are doing it for a low price, and you are doing it for a good cause, and I recommend you give it a try.
At the time that we are recording this, it did end yesterday, the bundle, but raised $8 million, which is
pretty fantastic.
Fucking incredible.
It'll also worth noting that Humble Bundle launched their own which is more like AAA or at least larger scale indie games. I think that's you can submit $30 and you get a crap load of games, and that is currently on now. So if you miss the itch.io bundle, here's another opportunity.
That one has Spelunky, Jackbox Party Pack 4, and Baba Is You in the first four games on it. NBA 2K20, Sonic All-Star Racing, FTL, BioShock Remastered. I mean, that one, if you don't have a PC, you should just get it anyway, knowing that maybe one day you will stock your PC with all of this stuff.
Yeah.
This is wild. Yeah, and all of the sales go to the local chapters of Black Lives Matter, I think, in the National Bail Fund network. It's really remarkable. I don't know. You covered a lot of like the great stuff in the 1700 games in the bundle for racial justice. But I wanted to shout out A Short Hike, which we talked about before.
Yeah.
Very, very good. I'm excited to read about Lancer. It's like a pen and paper RPG about like mechs and space stuff. I've heard really cool stuff about that you just get. There's a lot of stuff in here. Like, there's a hex kit for making maps for tabletop RPGs. There's a pack of just game assets if you want to make games. Like, that's in here too. I like all of the sort of errata that is in here. And also just Quadrilateral Cowboy. I know you just recommended it, but holy shit, that game just rips ass.
It could. I have a question for y'all from Ree or Bakery. What games feel like home to you?
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a nice question.
It is a very good question.
I mean, there's a couple. I think there's a way of interpreting that of just like makes you nostalgic for like a better time or like a time from your youth, or is it just like a general comfort game?
I will say one thing is that I live in an area that I feel like in West Virginia. Griffin and I were raised here, and I still live here. This is not exactly what this person was asking, but like interestingly, the first thing that popped in my head when we talked about this is like I don't feel like the area I live in has ever been particularly well represented in a home. In a game, I can't actually think of a game that has presented the region I live in a really good.
Oh, Fallout! Fallout 76 was fucking did it exactly. Real good.
Go on.
It's not West Virginia, but I don't know. Kentucky Route Zero was the only thing that sort of.
I mean, that's in a state next to it, but actually, West Virginia is not a surrealist, nightmare. So that is not great.
I interpreted this in just like a good vibes game that makes me like feel good that I return to a lot. And I think for me, like it's Undertale. I've replayed that game a lot, and it just like, you know, the music and the message and the like writing and the everything about that game is just kind of feel good, unless you're playing it like a psychopath, in which case it's explicitly a bad feeling game. That's the one. That's probably mine.
I think for me, it's more about what games can I play now that take me back to like childhood gaming and like what reverts me to that and like puts me in the exact same headspace I was in when I first played that game. And it's probably Link to the Past for me, which I replayed recently on Switch because of the you get it for free as part of subscribing to Switch Online.
Right.
And I mean, I've played that game countless times, but just that opening and the rain and you're walking alone to the castle. And I remember so clearly, like, not knowing where to go and then finding this secret little opening in the side of the castle and going down. And it's just like, it really just takes me back immediately. So that's probably mine.
Yeah. For me, it's just the games that I remember playing with, like, the kids in my neighborhood. Mm. And that was, you know, Tony Hawk on Nintendo 64, Kirby's Dream Course. We played just a disgusting amount of that game. And then obviously GoldenEye, which I don't really enjoy playing now. even not really enjoying it now, the feeling of playing Complex with proximity mines immediately just sends me to a certain place in my life.
That's a weird sort of mimetic, because everybody played that. Proximity Mines, and we did Temple, but pretty much.
I think it was one of the modes, like that, wasn't it?
Complex with Proximity Mines was great because you had, if I'm remembering correctly, the big plate glass windows.
Yeah.
So you had the hilarious like people running past, and then you watch the glass explode on.
But like, how did everyone play proximity mining. It wasn't a game mode. It wasn't like you clicked a button. No, I mean, you could set the any weapon to be the weapon to spawn. But like everybody I know who played GoldenEye played complex, just no weapons, running around.
It's a weird time period, and I don't know of any other games like that have this where like you said mimetic, and that's the word for it, where like modes would spread mimetically, like outside of the internet. Like people, you would have people like, oh, you guys haven't played King of the Bathroom? Well, here's how you play it. And it's like very like folk game almost, within the structure of this game. It's very cool. Any more plans?
Yeah, I got one more that I think y'all will have fun with. This is from Spinosaurus Stan. What game franchise do you think deserves a dark and gritty reboot?
Fucking none. Like, this is the last thing I want, which is a real shame, because boy howdy, we're playing a chipper one next week.
I think it's almost more interesting to think of it the other way, right? Of like a game that was dark and gritty, and how do you reimagine that as like light? Because the dark and going dark and gritty, I don't know, it's just so depressing.
I'll tell you a game that does that really brilliantly is House of the Dead.
Oh yeah, sure.
Where the oh my god, what's the
typing
good one?
Of the dead?
Overkill.
Oh. Yes, House of the Dead is one that's always been very grim, and then Overkill brought in this like very cool grindhouse aesthetic, and made something that was grim like very fun and silly. I think that's
and
really
also
good
Typing of the
of
Dead
the inverse.
Is great. Typing of the Dead is.
Typing the dad, sure, yeah.
So freaking great.
I've been sitting here trying to think of a game that improved, a game franchise that improved when it had a darker and grittier. And like, I'm thinking of literally every, I was going to say Zelda, but Twilight Princess is not my favorite. I think it has aged fairly well, but it is not even in my top five, like best Zelda games. I can't think of a single game that was improved by getting darker and grittier.
What about Kirby?
maybe I'll give you Kirby, just because I have not been into those games recently, because they're not, I mean, they are designed to be like super easy. So give me one that's for like a pro gamer, like a big dog gamer like me.
Well, also just real, right? Like you really have to like put some effort into munching down on everybody to take all the lessons. And then it's like some like Lynchian body horror where like it's like you're like Kirby bones are cracking to like morph into.
I think it's an easy fix to make it dark and gritty is just give Kirby teeth. Give Kirby teeth.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, just give Kirby like teeth, everybody.
And let me brush him.
We don't even need to see... Yes, please. We don't need to see him chew. Just know. Oh, yeah, he has teeth.
I want to brush him like I brush my dog's teeth with one of those little finger. You know, when you put the toothbrush around your finger and you just get in there. Oh, yeah. That'd be fun.
That's weird, Chris.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
So, anyway, on that note, thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Remember, you can follow and listen for free on Spotify, where you are probably listening to this right now, I have to imagine. If you want to share the show with folks, it's easy. You just find the link besties.fan, and that'll get them where they need to go.
We should talk about what we're doing next week.
Next week, we're playing...
Speaking of Dark and Gritty.
We're playing The Last of Us Part 2, which, yes, obviously is going to be a very challenging game, I think, to play.
I'm going to have fucking K-pop blasting in the background and eating like a bomb pop, just like trying
just
to
raving.
Keep the spirits up a little bit.
I mean, the reviews I thought would be like a little bit harsher, I think, just because like there is so much violence in the world that is happening like right now. That we are all seeing just more or less constantly at this point, that this does not seem like a very welcome games where enemies beg for their life as you stab them. Not my favorite.
There's a thing with a dog that I can't wait to talk about with y'all. It is.
Yeah. So like
so over the top.
So that's going to be next week. We're only going to talk about the first. Well, what did we talk about? The first 5 hours
first
or something
five
like that?
Hours.
So we don't like
we'll talk
first
about at least
hours.
That. If we play more, we play more. Here's a recommendation before we talk about this game for everybody who's listening. If you're one of those people who goes to Metacritic, and which is understandable. We all go to Metacritic or Rotten Tomatoes to like get an idea of how things are. If you click on Last of Us 2, great. You'll see a whole bunch of 100s. Scroll down to the bottom. And then underneath all the scored reviews, there's a bunch of reviews that don't have scores, like reviews from Polygon or Kotaku or Vice. And I think you'll see a very different type of review than you might otherwise see. And I encourage you to read those. I'm not saying that we are all going to inherently be negative on this game. I think, like,
no,
a lot of us might like it. But I do think before you listen to the episode, get a full perspective of what is out there. Because if you just read the first 10 reviews of this game, they all have that kind of inherent AAA games or art energy, which again,
when are movies gonna catch up to video games? And am I right, guys?
That's not bad. Reviewers have their own taste. I just think, like, I personally like having a whole bunch of different tastes all at once. So get that swirl of flavors and enjoy it, and then come listen to us next week.
But we are gonna talk about the coolest guns and what it looks like when you like the goo that comes out of the heads, all kinds of cool stuff.
World exclusive.
Sounds so sweet. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to our podcast. We hope you'll join us again next week for the besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
It's a Spotify original podcast in association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter and produced by Ben Hosley. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!